just put her hand on my arm and she said, "You want me to tell you how it was?" And she closed her eyes and she said, "I can still smell him." She still remembered it like it was yesterday.
In 1942, Pascagoula, Mississippi was forced into a state of terror by a man who would break into homes and cut the hair of his victims. This is the story of the Phantom Barber of Pascagoula. This is Southern Mysteries.
It's gonna be all right. These ain't dark or troubled times. It's a day like any other day. You got a dark and troubled mind, all right. You hold that baby tight, and I swear if you can hear me, then everything gonna be just fine. All right. All right. All right.
Welcome to Southern Mysteries, exploring mysteries, myths, and legends of the South. I'm your host, Shannon Ballard. In 1942, cities and towns across America watched as men and boys left home to fight World War II. The country was at war and tensions were on the rise, but people across the country were also working hard and rallying to produce materials troops needed to win the war and bring their men and their boys home safely. During that time, Pascagoula, Mississippi was a small town that experienced growth quickly as the war was underway. The population increased by 15,000 people in 2 years. Pascagoula was busy with workers manufacturing warships, which was a crucial industry for the nation. But in the summer of 1942, an unexpected threat brought tension and uncertainty to Pascagoula, Mississippi. With the increasing population came an economic boost for local businesses, but it also meant an uptick in crimes, such as burglaries and fights in local bars. Police were working hard to keep the peace and help calm down an already tense town. Tension and an overworked police force seemed to be the perfect recipe for hysteria when the people of the city heard that there was a man wandering the streets, preying on women and girls. His crimes involved breaking into his victims' homes, cutting their hair, and in one case, violently attacking a couple. The man became known as the Phantom Barber of Pascagoula. The first attack happened on the night of June 5th, 1942. The victims, Mary Briggs and Edna Heidel, had gone to bed in the comfort and peace of Our Lady of Victory's convent. In the middle of the night, the young women heard a strange noise that stirred them from their peaceful sleep. They looked up to see a man climbing out of their bedroom window. The young women were unharmed, but within minutes they noticed something very strange. A single lock of hair was missing from both of their heads. Police were called, and when they arrived on the scene, they asked the girls to give a description of the man they had seen climbing out of the window. It had been dark, and Mary Briggs told police all she could say about the man was that he was sort of short, sort of fat, and was wearing a white sweatshirt. This left police with very little evidence to investigate. 1 week later, the man struck again, breaking into the homes of David Petey and shearing his daughter Carol's hair. Mr. and Mrs. Petey noticed a bare footprint near the window of their daughter's room. Once again, police had one small clue, but not much to go on. News continued to spread through Pascagoula about this phantom barber, and fear was on the rise. Days later, another attack, and this time, the phantom barber turned violent. He broke into the home of Mr. and Mrs. S.T. Heidelberg and attacked them, beating them viciously with an iron bar. That night, the police deputized six men and brought in bloodhounds to try to pick up the scent of the attacker. The dogs led the deputies to blood-stained gloves in the woods near the Heidelbergs' home. But that was it. The hounds weren't able to pick up the scent again. Based on this information, police believed the phantom barber may have hidden a bicycle in the woods, so he would have a quick and easy way to make his escape. The final attack of the Phantom Barber happened 2 weeks later when he broke into the home of Mrs. R.R. Taylor and cut a 2-inch lock of hair from her head. When police arrived on scene, Mrs. Taylor told them she didn't get a good look at the man, but she did report a sickening smell. Authorities assume the attacker must have used a chloroform rag. And after that night, the attacks ended. Months passed, but the people of Pascagoula couldn't know the attacks were over. Residents were so cautious, and the wartime production was affected on the coast due to Ingalls Shipbuilding and the Jackson County Mills being unable to fill their night shift. Their workers were staying home to protect their families. Police continued to investigate, trying to calm the city. And later that summer, in August, the police arrested 57-year-old William Dolan, who they said was the Phantom Barber. Dolan was a German chemist with reported German sympathies, and Dolan had a grudge against the Heidelbergs. Mr. Heidelberg's father was a local judge who had refused to lower Dolan's bail on a trespassing charge just months before the Heidelbergs were attacked. Dolan was charged with the attempted murder of the Heidelbergs, but the actions of the prosecutors have left a question lingering for decades. You see, Dolan was never charged with one of the Phantom Barber attacks, and it's left people wondering, did police really catch the Phantom Barber? The FBI, who had been brought in to help with the case, searched William Dolan's home, and they found human hair and said it belonged to Carol Petey, one of the Phantom's victims. Years later, theories would emerge that the hair had been planted to ensure police could arrest someone and calm down the people of Pascagoula. William Dolan denied he had any involvement in the attack on the Heidelbergs and insisted he was not the Phantom Barber. No attacks ever happened again. As far as police and the public believed at the time, the Phantom Barber had been arrested and the city was safe again. William Dolan was found guilty of attempted murder of the Heidelbergs and was sentenced to 10 years in prison. 6 years later, the governor of Mississippi, Fielding Wright, reviewed the case and ordered that Dolan take a lie detector test. He took the test and passed. And in 1951, the governor of Mississippi set William Dolan free. Was William Dolan really the Phantom Barber? Or were these attacks two different men? It does seem odd that the attacks escalated and then de-escalated, with the first two attacks being about cutting hair, the next involving beating viciously two people, and the final attack once again back to only cutting hair. There are questions to this day as to whether the Phantom Barber of Pascagoula was really identified, went to prison, or was he never caught? Did he go free? Sandra Moncrief is the author of The Phantom Barber, a book that she wrote after decades of research. She was inspired to write the book while she was working in finance and met a victim of the Phantom Barber. Sandra was born and raised in Pascagoula. She was a young child during the summer of 1942, and she remembers the fear that set in across town. I spoke with Sandra about her book and her theories around the case and what it was like growing up in Pascagoula at the time, and her memory of the Phantom Barber.
Well, I remember him because when I was a child, my mother and my grandmother would sit up around the clock at night because they were afraid that he was going to come in and cut my hair. I vaguely have a memory of that as a real small child. I was only about 3 or 4 years old, and so I have a memory of that. And then when I went to college, I was kind of a late bloomer, so I didn't go to college until I was in my 40s, but there was a history professor there who grew up in Jackson County, and he remembered this story, and so he kind of tweaked my brain about it, and then I got to thinking about it, and that's when I started doing the research.
And I know there was a lot of speculation about this because he went from cutting hair of these two women to beating a couple, the Heidelbergs, and then back to cutting hair of a six-year-old.
My take on it was it was just two different things, but because of the panic that was surrounding this hair cutting, they just assumed it was the same guy. But in my opinion, it was two different people.
When you were little and this was happening, Sandra, there was a lot of construction happening for the war because World War II, of course, was going on at the time. And Pascagoula had been so busy to help with the war effort. But the Phantom Barber really made an impact on your town.
Basically, that, you know, that men at the shipyard Everybody was so panic stricken. This was in the middle of June, and they were literally nailing their windows shut so that, you know, no one could get. Of course, this is the days before air conditioning. I remember them talking about that and how the men at the shipyard then started staying home to protect their families. And so work slowed at the shipyard, which was bad because they were building the battleships and aircraft carriers or whatever it was back then during that time. So it was kind of hurt the business of the shipyard. And the shipyard in Pascagoula at that time was just about the biggest and the only means of income during the war. And it was just booming there.
Now, William Dolan, he was charged with a crime, but you think police got the wrong man.
I think he was basically what you'd call, I guess, a street person today. He drifted from one place to the other. He had a long record of small, petty crimes, but nothing involved with something like this. And so he blew into town because so many people were coming from the outside because of the jobs at the shipyard. He blew into town, and he would tell people, you know, that he was a graduate of the University of Heidelberg and that he had sympathy for the Nazis, and according to the way he talked. But I think he was basically just spinning tales more than anything.
Do you think William Dolan was just an easy scapegoat at the time?
Absolutely, because he was an outsider, and he was what we would call back then a Yankee. He talks funny, so, you know, people just automatically, you know, especially the police. But the policeman, the local policeman, the chief of police had a kind of a history with him anyway. You know, back then it was a little bit different than it is now, as you know. And the police kind of did what they wanted to do. And so he had a little bit of a history with this chief of police. And so I think it was just an opportunity for him to pin it on him.
Okay, so do you have a theory as to who the Phantom Barber really was then?
Yes, if you read the epilogue in my book, you'll see I talk about my theory that I thought it was a local person there. And the interesting thing is when you go to these book signings, people come from all over, and a lot of the people in Jackson County, my first one I had was like 100 people there. And so many of these people grew up in Pascagoula, and they remembered this. And so I had two people to come up to me and tell me that they knew who it was, and it was somebody in their family, but then they took off. They wouldn't talk to me about it. It was like they were still afraid that, you know, there might be some repercussions from it. And so it was just very interesting. But yes, I think it was a local person. And since then, I've dug in a little bit further, and I do think that who this person was, he joined the military right after this happened, and he left town. And that's why it stopped.
Have you ever felt fear or threatened in any way by family members of the person you believe was the Phantom Barber? You know, maybe they don't want you talking about this.
Oh, no, it's been so long ago till most everybody that was affiliated with it is long gone. And there are a few older people in the families that are still alive. And I've got a feeling that the people in this family knew that he was guilty and knew who did it. And so, you know, of course, they don't want to talk about it. But the interesting thing is, even though this man the man that they convicted of it, he was from New York City originally, and he ended up somehow down in Pascagoula. And then afterward, when he got out of jail, he came back to Bay St. Louis in Waveland, which is, of course, on the opposite end of the coast from Pascagoula. And he set up shop there, and then he disappeared. And then at some point in time, they found a body in the Mississippi River, and his wife and stepdaughter claimed the body, waked him at home for 3 days in an open casket. They buried him in the Cedar Crest Cemetery in Bay St. Louis. And then after the fingerprints came back, they discovered that it wasn't him. They've got somebody buried in the Bay St. Louis Cemetery in an unmarked grave that they have no idea who he is. And then later on, the wife, this guy's wife, She always thought that something was funny about it. So she went out to California. Apparently, she had some knowledge of where he was or him living out there. at some time, and she went out there to try to find him and never could find him. But there was an article in the paper, and I found this in my research out in Sacramento, where he had been discovered loitering around some kind of a lumber yard out there, and the cops arrested him. Thus, he had a record out there. And then after that, he disappeared and was never heard from after that. So he, and rather than him being in the grave, he was out in California somewhere. I don't think he was a phantom barber, though. He was just got caught up in all of the chaos and the fear that people had over there. The funny thing is, the girl who, the first one that they cut, he cut her hair, years later, after when I was doing this research, I had gone back to work in the bank after I graduated from college, and the girl, the original girl whose hair he cut, worked in the same bank with me. So I got to interview her. It was very interesting. She still remembered it like it was yesterday.
What were some of the memories she shared of him and what happened when she was attacked?
We went into this back room, and I had my tape recorder and everything, and I sat down and I started asking her questions. And she just put her hand on my arm and she said, "Do you want me to tell you how it was?" And I said, "Well, yes, of course." And she closed her eyes and she said, "I can still smell him." Now, she was up in her 60s when I was interviewing her. And of course, when her hair was cut, she was 11. So she was still could feel it. And then she told me the whole story. Of course, I've had some information given to me at these book signings I've had. So I'm still doing a little research on it. So we'll see. Maybe I'll find out in the end the truth.
So is Sandra Moncrief right? Was William Dolan a scapegoat? And if so, whatever happened to the Phantom Barber? That's a mystery that may never be solved. Southern Mysteries is hosted and produced by me, Shannon Ballard. You can explore more about the Phantom Barber and dive deeper into the story by checking out Sandra Moncrief's book, The Phantom Barber. You can find it on Amazon. There's also a link in the show notes. You can also find the Southern Mysteries podcast discussion group on Facebook. You can connect with fans of Southern Mysteries. I'd love to connect with you there. You can see photos of the people and places mentioned in each episode. And of course, suggest stories that you would love to hear on Southern Mysteries. Just search for Southern Mysteries on Facebook to join the group. If you're on Twitter, I'd love to connect with you there. You can follow me at Mysteries Pod. Thanks for listening.
It'll be all right. We're careful what we got to buy. There might be